Welcome to the Shaping Portsmouth podcast. Shaping Portsmouth is a collaboration of key Portsmouth businesses, transforming Portsmouth together. Hello and welcome to another Shaping Portsmouth podcast with me, CEO Dave Humphreys. And today I am joined by Andrew Starr, who is our volunteer program lead on the Portsmouth Ambassadors program. Mm-hmm. Welcome, Andrew.
Thank you indeed.
And so I'll start off by saying you're not the only volunteer lead on the Ambassadors program. There's also Terence, who unfortunately is not well today. So it's just the two of us. Yeah. And because I'm sure there will be people listening that have no idea who you are, let's find out a little bit about you, Andrew. So are you born in Portsmouth?
No, I was born way up in the west of England, in Gloucester, and grew up in Gloucestershire, the Forest of Dean. I went to school there, and when I was 18, having done my A-levels, I applied to various places around the country, but I ended up coming to Portsmouth to do my degree, which was rather modern back then, in French studies with German. One of the more forward-looking ones, we didn't have to do literature, and I hated literature, so it was all about the study of the culture and the countries and that sort of thing, much more interesting for me. And while down here, I began to, you know, quite like being here near the sea, but not too far from the country. Everything you need is here. So I decided when I did my teacher training that I would remain here. And I got jobs in the local area, but not actually in Portsmouth. So I taught for 20 years in relatively local schools, Hedge End and Southbourne. And when I'd paid the mortgage, I gave all that wondrous teaching career up, went back to uni again and did a master's degree translation and became a translator interpreter, took on some tour guiding for the city, and then also joined the Caen and Duisburg twinning committees, which is a voluntary thing. And through that, I heard about the Shaping Portsmouth Ambassadors scheme. And I also do quite a lot of other volunteering in the city for other schemes as well, but we might talk about those in a minute.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. So you'd step there into the twinning committee, but let's go back to the languages piece first. So obviously you said you studied languages, become a teacher. So what languages do you speak?
French is my first one, then German. And while I was doing my degree here, I would work to earn money for EF language travel at the University of Brighton, which was Brighton Poly in old money. And I would earn some money to pay off my overdraft and get some money for the following year, teaching mainly Italians and some Scandinavians and various other ones. And by teaching Italians, I began to pick up Italian because they'd start translating what I was saying, and I began to understand it. So I did a GCSE in Italian, got a grade A star, and thought from then on I'll, keep practicing and using my Italian too. So, yeah, Italian is my third foreign language. It takes me a few moments to be able to start speaking it. I have to sort of, you know, rev the engine up, as it were. I can do French and German easily, you know, no problems.
So because you find it with European languages that people quite often speak multiple languages. Mm-hmm. And I suppose that's to do with the sort of base language, foundation language being Latin, I guess, and the similarities in words and constructs, etc. The German always strikes me as the odd one out. French, Italian and Spain, probably Spanish seems more similar. You don't speak Spanish?
I don't speak it. However, when it's written down, I understand it.
Yeah,
I know what they're talking about. When Spanish people speak, provided they speak slow enough, I can understand them. And I can usually make myself understood by speaking slowly in Italian back to them.
Right.
If they come from certain parts of South America, I can very much easily understand them. They have a different way of pronouncing things. So Spanish is one I can sort of cope with, but I don't know how to construct sentences and do actual language. You can also generally figure out things in Romanian, because I speak German. After a while of listening to Swedish, I begin to follow it without needing to read subtitles. Also, Dutch is relatively easy to read, but when they speak it, it doesn't sound anything like the written word to me.
Yeah. And so when you taught, did you favour a particular language or did you find yourself teaching across all of them?
I taught both French and German and some Italian during my teaching career. I still teach French and German now, but to adults. I tended to find French easier to cope with because there's less complicated grammar. The pronunciation is the difficult thing with French and all the silent bits, which German doesn't have, so it's got that advantage. But German grammar is very complicated when you want to do it well.
Yeah. And French and German seem to be the more traditionally taught languages, don't they? Italian is not one you generally see taught in schools.
No, in schools, Italian is quite a rare one. German is getting rarer because I'm rather old. German was the second language in most schools when I was in school. Now it's even Spanish is the lead one and French is the second one in most schools now.
Yeah, I'd speaking to the colleges, I don't think either of the local colleges do German A levels anymore. So no. In fact, I don't even know that they do French, but they definitely don't do German.
No, they don't do German. They did until recently. They haven't, but they don't have it anymore. French is still available. You can do German, as far as I know, still at Peter Simmons in Winchester, which is not that local, but it's not millions of miles away.
And do you miss teaching? Or?
Well, I still do, but I teach adults.
Yeah,
so adults. What I don't miss is the teenagers anymore. I'm too old for teenagers now.
Now that and before we start talking ambassadors, that led you into your love of languages, led you into another voluntary role. You've already mentioned the twinning committee. So I just wanted to find out a bit about that first. How did you end up getting involved with the twinning committee?
So because when I stopped teaching full time and started my own business, I had some time to devote to doing other things, and I thought I would like to get involved with twinning. During my degree, I had done a year abroad in France, so I did some teaching and being an assistant in France. And then I took it upon myself to go to the twinning committee in the town I was in, Lannion. And Lannion was twinned with Caerphilly in England, but Gunzburg in Germany. So I asked if there was anybody in Gunzburg who wanted to do an exchange with somebody from England, and they found me a family. And so I went to visit and stay with the family after my year in France so that I didn't lose my German and could work on my German as well. And because they really helped me with that, I thought, well, and I could now give back to a twinning committee and give them a hand. So I joined the Colne Portsmouth Friendship Committee. And after a year or so, we merged it with the Duisburg Portsmouth Friendship Committee. And so now we have a joint committee for both Portsmouth twin cities of Colne and Duisburg in Germany. And so we have people from Germany visiting us in August and from Colne visiting us in June next, well, this month, later this month. And I will also be taking some runners from Portsmouth to Caen to run Les Courants de la Liberté, which is a marathon or half marathon in Caen next weekend. I certainly won't be running, but they will.
And so you've obviously mentioned Caen and Duisburg as our twinned cities. But there's a lot of other cities that we have connections with. Now, I don't know what the technical term for the collective is, partner cities or friendship cities.
So we have sister cities, partner cities and friendship cities. There's all three sort of and links.
My best guess is going to be that the sister cities are all called Portsmouth.
There are three sister cities called Portsmouth in the United States. New Hampshire. The largest one is in Virginia, and the other one is part of Rhode Island's capital, and Newport, Rhode Island. It's on the edge of Newport, Rhode Island. So the smallest of the states is Rhode Island. They made a Portsmouth Compact. There's three of them altogether, and the idea is that they sort of share with us news and stories. Two of them have got naval bases. Mm. So the Portsmouth Naval Base is in New Hampshire. And what was originally called Gosport Naval Base is in Virginia, but it's now called Norfolk.
Yeah.
The other sister cities we have, because we have some quite big connection with them, is Sydney in Australia, because it was from here that the first volunteers went out to colonise and landed in what is now Sydney. And so down in Old Portsmouth, there's the two rings of friendship, and there's one just like it in Sydney, but theirs is much more shinier than ours because it's the new world. So there's Sydney. Then we also have Maitsuru in Japan. General Togo from Japan came to study ship mastery, sailing for the Navy here, and he formed a Navy in Japan, taking back with him a sort of beef stew that's very popular in that area of Japan, which he learned here in Portsmouth. He trained on what was Victory as a training ship. And so they have the, part of their, one of their major generals in the Navy trained here way back when. And so the Togo Avenue in Gunwolf Keys is named after him, not the country of Togo.
Right. Okay. That's a little fact that I've learned already.
Then we have two in China, Shuhai and Shangxiang, both of which are ports. Shangxiang is a major naval port, and Zhuhai is the one with a big bridge that links Hong Kong and Macau to the mainland, is on the Yellow River Delta. We have Sylhet in Bangladesh. The largest non-white population in Portsmouth is from Bangladesh, and many of them come from Sylhet, and that was set up by the Bangladeshi business community here in Portsmouth. One of the very long-standing famous restaurants on Albert Road. Beginning with A, am I allowed to mention it? Can I give it? Can I give it a free mention?
Yes,
they're sort of behind the Bangladeshi linked city. Where else do we have? Haifa in Israel has been a sister city since 1958. We have got Halifax in Canada, Nova Scotia, which is where lots of British Army ships are, and where many of the dead from the Titanic are buried, which is a sort of local thing. Some of the people from the Titanic were in from Portsmouth. And of course, there's also Stanley on the Falkland Islands, which is a new recent one, and a new link of a sort of friendship link with Valletta in Malta.
Mm.
I think I've covered them all. I've probably forgotten one, but but I think I've covered most of them. That's off the top of my head.
So how does it come about that that happens? So obviously do you know why we ended up twinned with Kahn and Duisberg?
Mm. Duisberg was 76 years ago,
right?
After World War II, there was a British general who was stationed there in Duisburg, and Duisburg had been heavily bombed by the RAF. Portsmouth had been heavily bombed by the Luftwaffe. And the idea came about originally to build bridges between the two nations, because after all, it was politics that caused the war, and a certain leader in a certain country that was the main cause behind it, and people themselves, if you get them to meet each other, they found out they've got far more in common than the things that divide them. And that was the idea. And so young people from Portsmouth and from Duisburg would start visiting each other. And many things were sorted out, school exchanges, football matches, all these sorts of things to build bridges and get people talking to one another. And then you find out, in fact, you can be good friends, even if you don't necessarily speak each other's language, because, generally the Germans were learning English as well as people from this country learning German. France, the link with Kahn will be 40 years old next year. It came the year after the Brittany Ferries link, which is 50 years old this year, which is why they're having a sort of celebratory party soon in the port. Then you've got, it was a sort of logical link, but also, this was the big launch pad for D-Day, and after D-Day in the 9th to the 19th of July 1944, the 10-day battle for the freedom of Caen took place, and it was the first major city in France to be liberated after D-Day.
Okay. Makes sense.
So there's lots of links there in with history. All the beaches are still all there for people to visit. Sword Beach was where they landed to ultimately liberate Caen and the town of Bayeux, where the tapestry is, and Caen was where William the Conqueror, the first king of sort of modern England, if you like, was ultimately buried, and they still have his left thigh bone there. The rest of him was pilfered during the Protestant and Catholic uprising in the time of Louis the 14th. Around that time, they broke into the Abbaye aux Hommes, where his tomb is, and they thought they'd probably stolen all of him, but they left one bone behind.
Yeah.
So it's still there.
Again, another thing I'd learnt already. And I suppose those two make sense, and clearly that's been done quite some time ago. But the others, what was the, how do they go about becoming a friendship city or a sister? I mean, the sister cities are, again, I suppose, obvious because of the name. But how does that get driven, and what role does the committee play in that?
So the committee for Caen and Duisburg doesn't really play much of a role in getting all the others and managing any of the others. But the city council itself has got a twinning advisory group.
Right.
And if there is a consideration or a reason someone puts forward to become a partnership city, a sister city, then they will get in contact with the council. The twinning advisory group will meet. It meets twice yearly. And people from the councillors will discuss the pros and cons and whether it's, you know, worth it. Usually there does need to be some sort of historic reason or, cultural link or reason that it's a city that's like Portsmouth, for example. So twinning us with a small village on the top of a mountain is probably not going to happen. But if it's a port, if it's got marine environment, if there's a university, a navy, some sort of thing that it's in common, it's a useful way of starting. And then, of course, you have ready-made contacts in that city, which something like Shaping Portsmouth could reach out to. And we have tried in the past with a similar group that was trying to set up and never got anywhere, called Yes We Caen in Caen, named after what Obama said when he went over there. He said, "Yes, we gone," like that, and everybody took and ran with it.
Yeah.
And it was a group of entrepreneurs and things that wanted to start something similar, but I don't think it had the organizational skills to get off the ground. But it was tried, and I helped them, setting it up with a few meetings. That's the sort of thing. There needs to be some sort of reason for it, so we don't have just any unusual, people. And there are places that do write to Portsmouth and ask to, join up with us, and we do turn down quite a few because we can't really see a reason for doing it.
Hmm. And so I therefore guess that the lion's share of the work then comes with sort of managing the relationship and organising visits.
So for the committee itself, it's all about the people-to-people visits. So it's not really council ones. That's the officers in the council that do all that sort of thing. So when councillors and mayors and things come over, they organise that. But we help out. If people want to come to Portsmouth, we will help out with finding them places to stay, giving them advice. Yeah. And likewise, people going to Caen and Duisburg, they come to us and we will find someone they can stay with, or advice on how to get there and where to stay when they get there if they don't want to stay with hosts, that sort of idea. Yeah.
And this is a volunteering role as well, so alongside the ambassador's work, and probably a very natural fit with each other.
Yeah, they are. Yeah.
So, Portsmouth Ambassadors, you've been, we've just been working it out before the podcast.
Yeah.
So you originally did the training.
It'll be 9 years in August.
Yeah, 9 years ago. And then you very quickly became involved in the actual program committee itself. Mm-hmm. And then obviously there's a point where the structure's changed and moved to you and Terence becoming the volunteer leads.
Yes, that's right, yeah.
So what is the Portsmouth Ambassadors Programme?
The Ambassadors Programme is a chance for people who live or work in Portsmouth to be able to share their knowledge and share their passion for the city, to big up the city whenever possible, to point out to people who think there's nothing here to do, that there's plenty to do and what you can do and what is free and the amazing things that we have on offer here, which if you come from somewhere else, you may realize that, you know, are just here on the doorstep. Mm. Whereas when you grow up maybe and live here, you just sort of, they're just there, they're taken for granted, and you don't necessarily even engage with things like the seafront and the parks and museums and all the things that this city has to offer. So it's that sort of idea to look at the city through the eyes of maybe a visitor or a tourist, and all these many millions of people that come to Portsmouth to visit us.
Absolutely. And so before we focus more in that, are there any other volunteering roles that you do as well as as those two?
Yes. Yeah, so on the part of volunteering, I teach English for the Portsmouth City of Sanctuary,
right,
and for the Friends Without Borders charities, which work with asylum seekers and refugees here, and really anybody who wants to improve their English. But of course, that's not all they do. They will help asylum seekers with their cases, with funding, with all sorts of different things that they may need access to, help and advice. But that my role there is to teach English. And it's all about generally helping people to improve their English, because if they don't have any skills in English, they're not going to be able to function in this country. So that's one thing I do. I am also chair of governors at a primary school here in Portsmouth. What else do I do? Well, loads of things. Can't think of them all at the moment. But twinning is another one that you mentioned. Yeah. So I think that's probably mostly it. So the ambassadors bit is about being able to do things in the city, to volunteer, to meet and greet visitors, for example, that come. So at an event that is running in the city, the ambassadors could be asked to come along and be present, you know, and help visitors to the city find things they need or guide them to the right place, that sort of stuff, because we know where these places are and how it is to get there. So I think that's a good sort of summing up of the role, maybe.
So you've mentioned a whole host of volunteering roles there. So I'm surprised you've got any time to yourself.
Yeah.
But if someone wanted to become an ambassador, what's involved?
So we currently will be running an online training course. So you will be presented with information about the city, which you may or may not know. And there'll be some questions asked of you. And if you can answer the questions correctly, you will have done the first part of the ambassador training. And that will get you into the schemes to do other things, such as a first aid course maybe, or some other things that we will offer in the future once you've gone through that. And then once you've become the ambassador, you will get information from the Shaping Portsmouth team regarding opportunities for volunteering. So when a big event is going on in the city, let's give the Great South Run as an example. Loads of people come into the city, and the people who run the Great South Run are all from Newcastle. So when people come and say to them and queue up where people are giving out the bibs, and they say, oh, where's the nearest cash point, or where's the bus stop, or whatever it is, they don't tend to know. So we go down and give that advice, and we also meet the runners and we help them pin their numbers on and, you know, write numbers and do last minute things and point them in the bag drop direction and all that sort of stuff. And we are provided with the information of how the site runs itself, and that's something, and you get to meet and greet and visit people.
And that meet and greet bit is quite important. It's, you know, having that authentic Portsmouth knowledge and being that local and just being friendly and welcoming, and doing exactly what it says on the tin and being an ambassador for the city.
That's right. Yeah.
Which leads me on to one of the niche roles within the ambassador cohort, which is our port meet and greet ambassadors, which is a bit you left out of your list of volunteer. I know you do you do the meet and greet work up at the port as well.
Yes.
What does that involve?
So part of the ambassadors scheme is to the cruise ambassadors. So we have many cruise ships that visit the city. Some will only be putting people on the ship and taking people off the ship. So that those ones we don't do because they're not staying and visiting the city. But there are many that come in for the day. And on those days, some of the passengers will have booked to go to Stonehenge or Winchester or London, other excursions. So those that are doing that, they'll just go on their coaches. Some will come back for the afternoon and then they've got the afternoon to visit Portsmouth, and others will just be here all day. So the port puts on shuttle buses to take them into town, or sometimes if it's a huge ship, there'll be a water taxi that will take them to Gun Wharf. And we will be either in the terminal or right next to the ship in a sort of hangar building with information to give out about Portsmouth. So the tourist information people in Portsmouth will give us mini guides to Portsmouth and other bits of information we can share. And then people come and ask us questions like things like, where can I get a decent Sunday roast if it's Sunday? Or where's a good place to get fish and chips? And, you can recommend a few places you know if you wish. Others will ask about where they can buy a new suitcase or anything like that. So you can direct them because where these things can be got in the city. And, you can give them a map. And if there's enough ambassadors, some people will go on the shuttle buses with them or on the water taxi and accompany them to these places. We have a lot of ships in from Germany as well. So when the German ships are in, I will go along if I possibly can because I speak German. And that's a good thing to have people who can actually, answer their questions in their own language. But being a linguist is definitely not a prerequisite for doing the volunteering. Other people can quite easily come along. Many of the Germans will speak English or enough English to be able to understand. But there's also ships that are full of Americans and Australians and other nationalities too. So it's all something very much, quite rewarding because the fact that they've been welcomed by somebody from the city already starts a positive impression. And then when they come back, having seen the city, they usually, oh, what a wonderful city you live in. And it does make you think, yeah, we do actually live in quite a wonderful place. And there's many, many places out there that don't have nearly half the things that you've got here in Portsmouth.
It's a matter of perspective, isn't it?
Yeah.
And the way you look at it it's to your earlier point about, forgetting all the wonderful things we have on our doorstep.
Yeah.
But I remember back in my policing days when one of the big American aircraft carriers was in the Solent, and we were chatting to the Americans shore team and organising everything. And they were saying what they like about Portsmouth is it's the most beautiful port in the world to come in and out of. And you sort of stand there and think, really? Is it? And because we're used to it, and we probably only ever see it from the Isle of Wight ferry anyway, or the odd cross channel, you probably don't appreciate that compared to a lot of the very industrial ports that they must visit.
Yeah.
Portsmouth is actually quite something. Mm. So, but for our visitors on the cruise ships, that friendly welcome, that meet and greet, and again, that authentic local knowledge, the little tips and the problems that you can solve, the things you can direct people to, it just makes such a world of difference. And that's what we get the good feedback about. Very rarely, and I know it's nice for people to come to somewhere else and have someone speak to them in their own language. That's a great thing. But it's rarely what the scheme gets praised for. Normally it's just the friendly welcoming, the support, especially we always seem to get a lot of positive feedback when ambassadors are on the shuttle buses and traveling with them. People really, really value that support.
Yeah, so when there's an ambassador on the bus and people see things out of the bus window and the ambassador says, oh, well, that's the Roman Catholic Cathedral, or that's the naval base, and you wouldn't get that just going on the bus yourself without anybody local. And so, things are pointed out. They also think of more questions on the way that they will ask people. And, you know, it's always very handy. And the city guides that are provided have got little maps in them, so people can get out their pen and mark something as they're going if they wish. It does really help to have people just who are local, who, you know, are quite happy to meet guests from other places. And some of the people on the cruises are actually British too.
Yeah.
You know, they're from other parts of the UK on a cruise. And, you know, I think, especially if they are British, there is this perception that Portsmouth's a bit rough and a bit drunk and sailor-y from, you know, British literature of yore, you know, that sort of thing. And they're always really surprised by, you know, how pleasant the city actually is.
Mm. And of course, we have the double bonus when the water taxis are running, that they get a water tour of the naval base through to straight into Gunwharf Quays in front of the tower.
That's right.
Which is a lovely little trip in itself.
Yeah.
As you alluded to earlier, we're in the process of relaunching the Ambassadors Programme, and we've now got this online training instead of what you previously did, which was the course up at what is now Highbury College. There is then the ability to specialise. So if people, once they've done that initial induction, want to become cruise ambassadors and meet and greet, we can introduce them to Vanessa and the team and they can do that. But we're looking at running lots of little modules so people could learn about maybe the Spinnaker Tower or the Historic Quarter or the D-Day Museum or even we even have volunteers that work at Hover Travel.
Yes.
Over the weekend of the Isle of Wight Festival when it's particularly busy, helping out the people travelling to and from the island.
Yes.
So there's a whole range of different options. And once they've done that initial online induction training, people can branch out and do different things.
That's right. Yeah, so that's the idea. So once you've done the initial training, you are an ambassador, and then there will be many other bits and bobs that you can volunteer for. Yeah. But I don't know what the term would be, volunteer in for. But other things you can do, some more training, more little snippets of information. You know, that if you were to do more about the D-Day story, you'd learn about the landing craft tank and what it did. The amazing Overlord embroidery, which an awful lot of people in Portsmouth have never seen because you have to pay to see it and it's inside a building. But it's such a unique piece of art and it is right here in Portsmouth.
Yeah, and there will be, I'm sure, lots and lots of people that have never looked at it before that will be already in possession of their Victorious Festival tickets. And that is a very good opportunity to be able to get in and see it.
That's right.
Because it's open during the festival, isn't it?
Yes, and people cannot visit it without being part of the festival, so it's open to people who are in the festival. They possibly haven't realised that when they are there, and it's definitely something.
That might be the chance to get in and have a look without having to
Definitely pay. Worth seeing.
Yeah. So, now, so the big question, especially as it's Volunteers Week, and not focusing just on the ambassadors, but you know, a myriad of volunteering roles, the question is why do you volunteer?
I think it's to give something back to the community that I live in and to help people out. I'm always quite happy to help people who need some sort of help from me, especially if it's within my skill set. That's the thing. So that's why I do the English teaching, because, you know, it's something I can do quite easily. There's also groups. It helps you, get out and make friends with people who you wouldn't normally necessarily meet. Mm. You know, people who are different ages to you, from different backgrounds to you. One of the things I do is the Portsmouth Society. I've just remembered that one. And there's all sorts of people who help there to sort of look at the city itself and where things are going, and certain people, and they're very interested in the planning procedures, which doesn't really interest me that much, but you know, that's the sort of people who look at planning applications and see, you know, why would they change this wonderful building into whatever they're trying to change it into, and why not reuse it, for example? So that's something that people, you know, I meet people now who are really interested in that, and wouldn't normally meet people like that in my general day-to-day life. So when you're doing volunteering, you do get to meet people from all sorts of different roles and things that you wouldn't normally come into contact with. So that's one of the reasons I do it. I think it's when you're especially if you're sort of not working in an environment anymore where you're meeting, but then if you are meeting the same people every day and all you talk about is shop talk, it's a good chance to find other people, and then you can't talk shop because you don't have that in common. You have to find other things to talk about.
Yeah. And there is some quid pro quo to it there, because you started off talking about, you know, the doing something to support the city you live in, but actually there's things that you get back out of it as well.
That's right. So doing things with languages, of course, helps me to practice my language and keep the skills up. If you are a Portsmouth ambassador, then we do tend to have special VIP visits from time to time for ambassadors through, like to go and see the hovercraft and maybe even go on the hovercraft to go visit behind the scenes at somewhere like the Mary Rose or some other museum in the city. You know, Wimmering Manor was somewhere we have done before, visiting somewhere that's closed to the public generally, but it opened up especially for us. All sorts of little things like that will be on offer throughout the time for ambassadors who have signed up and are doing things, you know, and of course all sorts of stuff that we do not yet know that may happen in the future.
but I think in general, volunteering, as well as being great for giving back, is great for your own well-being, for meeting, as you've already said, you know, meeting other people, new people, trying something different, learning, and just that whole sense of fulfillment through doing something yourself. And one of the other volunteer roles that you touched on but we haven't talked about in there, was school governing.
Yes.
And another quite important role, a bit more formal, but I would put that in probably in the same basket as sort of charity trustees as well, those committee roles. But what do you get from that?
Well, as a former teacher, that's why I went into it. So I had the sort of, what's the word, sympathy for those people at the chalk face that actually are doing the teaching. So I know what it's like to be a teacher, but I also do understand how schools work and run, which not everybody does. So it does let you know quite what it takes to run a school, because it's not just about turning up 3 minutes before the children do and then leaving 3 minutes after they do. All the planning, all the how a school manages the not particularly large budgets they get, because it does seem like a huge amount of money, but when you realise how much everything actually costs, and then you see how they cost it and how they're funded and how they have to work out, like, to the penny, how every penny is spent, you'll find out all that sort of stuff. A governor is there to be help the senior leadership team be strategic. So we don't really get down to much of the real pennies, but we see how they get run out of the pennies. So we keep a focus, and by telling us about it and being open and clear about it, it should help stop there being any unusualness going on in budgeting in schools. That's the idea of it. We also get to have a look into what the children are doing in the classrooms and get reports from the various leaders about how they're learning and what they're doing. And you can see how the school is doing in league tables and what plans there are to address issues. And if there aren't plans, then it's the governor's job to say, well, why is there no plan for this? And, you know, that sort of thing. So it's like holding the leaders to account for, you know, they are the ones leading the school. They're the ones getting paid to do that role. So we are there to make sure that they are doing that role, and they have to report to us and convince us, in some cases, people who are
totally unaware of how schools run, so they've got to really explain it in simple terms, what they're doing and how it should work. So it's a really good role to have, and, you know, this city really does need school governors.
Yes, yes. And I think in any of those governance roles, whether it's a school governor, whether it's a trustee on a charity board, or whether it's something like we have at Shaping on our board, the non-executive directors, who again are all volunteers, I think that the little phrase that sums those roles up really well is support and challenge.
Yes.
It's very much about getting the balance right of that, but doing both.
Yes.
Clearly there's schools always desperate for governors. We've certainly done a lot of work to get the trustee vacancies in the city down, and have been quite successful working in partnership with the team at the Hive in doing that. But we still advertise on our newsletters every other week a whole heap still of trustee vacancies that are available. So there's loads of opportunities for people who want to volunteer and maybe don't want to be an ambassador to do that. And there's then on top of that, you know, we're currently sat in the podcast studio in Spark Community Space, a space predominantly run by volunteers and a small staff team. But there are countless charities across the city that work in that way, really small staff teams, but an absolute reliance on volunteers to deliver the thing they do. So again, if you are looking for a volunteering role, you don't know what is out there or what you might want to do, but would like to have a chat about that, then do drop us a line at Shaping Portsmouth, and we can connect you with a number of different charities, or talk to you about things that are available, or even talk to you more about our own ambassadors scheme. But I think a great way to celebrate National Volunteers Week, one of these weeks that's great for putting a little spotlight on volunteering, but something that we like to continue doing all through the year at Shaping Portsmouth, and acknowledging the great work volunteers do. I've said it a number of times to people in describing how we as an organisation work, and it very much is, we are partner powered. We are team coordinated, but we're volunteer enabled. And it's the volunteers that actually deliver the impact that Shaping Portsmouth has across the city. And it's like that for many organisations. So I know we can't get all of our volunteers in the room. So you're just one representative, Andrew, of our whole army of volunteers. But it's a good week to say thank you to you and all the other volunteers, whether it's board members, whether it's our programme leads, whether it's our army of ambassadors, or whether it's just those people across our businesses that volunteer to come and do little bits to support in the delivery of our programs. We really appreciate everything you all do. So I will thank you on behalf of all of our volunteers as a representative, Andrew. You know, we appreciate all of that work you do for our city.
I'm sure everybody really enjoys the roles that they do and the opportunities to meet people and help out where they can.
So, Andrew, before we finish, we always end our podcast with the same question. And I like to ask our guest, is there somewhere in Portsmouth that you would recommend, or something you would recommend to do in the city? What would be your top tip? And I would imagine as an ambassador, you've probably got quite a lot of recommendations, but what would be your top one?
There are definitely lots of places I would take people, but the one thing I always try and aim to get people to do while I'm with them is to go up to the viewpoint on Portsdown Hill, which is right on the edge of the city, but literally where it meets the rest of England. Because up there you have what I call the Hollywood view.
Yeah.
It's like being on the Hollywood Hills, you know, where the sign says Hollywood and you've got all of the city in front of you. and the Isle of Wight and the Solent and everything, especially on a sunny day when you can see everything. And, you know, you can really point out the whole city and everything and all the sights from up there. And so they can see everything that the city has to offer. And that's the thing I always try and get people to do. And as we have talked about people from Twin Cities and things, some of them had been to Portsmouth many, many times, but had never been up there. And then they went up there with me and it's like, we must come back. And so they would take coach loads of people in there, up there on their way back from visiting just to see that site because they had never seen it before.
It's and it goes back to, again, to your earlier point about the things that we take for granted in our own city.
Yeah.
But it's an incredible view from up there. And of course, you've got either side, you've got viewpoints either side of the A3, and you can actually go further down towards the Armouries Museum and get completely different angle on the whole harbour and Porchester. Yeah. But also, it's one that changes so much seasonally and time of day. You know, the photographer in me likes it in the morning when you've got that really nice soft light, quite often really still water, and it looks just beautiful. But you know, afternoon you've got a complete in full sun, a very different view. It's a good shout. I don't know that it's one that's been raised before, actually. So that could be a first time that the viewpoint's been mentioned.
It's definitely worth it. When I had groups from Con coming in, coaches and things that we'd have, and they'd arrive at very early in the morning on the ferry. So a coach would pick us up, and the first thing we would do would be to go up and out towards Wickham and just have a little look around and drive through Wickham Square because it's an old quaint chocolate boxy type thing.
Yeah.
Have a little, visit to Southwick, maybe to another place that all the doors are red apart from the vicar's house, and all the thatched cottages to look at, that sort of thing. And then we go back up the hill as the sun was coming up. And that was quite something. The sun's just there, low in the sky, and then, you know, it was a frosty morning and all the cameras are out and they're all taking views from the coach and thinking about how marvellous it all is. And I'm thinking, it is really marvellous, but I've seen it a thousand times. And you sort of, you know, it doesn't really have that magic until you've got people who haven't seen it before. Yeah, a little bit like the Spinnaker Tower view, but further away. You know, it's a similar sort of view, but in a different perspective, and it's also a free one.
The
Spinnaker Tower view. Definitely. People will do that one, but it's definitely something that you can do relatively easily if you've got a car, of course.
Yeah. And you've now, something you said there's got me thinking. I'm thinking of a giant Portsmouth sign now, Hollywood-esque along there. I think that's a very good shout. Maybe that's something we should strive for if we get the City of Culture bid. Portsmouth in big letters.
Yeah. I do have a feeling that was mentioned at some point in the past as well. But
a great recommendation. Thank you for that one.
Okay.
And it's been great talking to you and finding out a bit more. I can't believe 2.5 years in, and it's the first time we've done a podcast. So great to learn a bit more, and particularly about the twinning and the relationships with other cities Portsmouth has across the world. Brilliant. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
This podcast was brought to you by Shaping Portsmouth, working to make Portsmouth the number one UK city in which to invest, live, learn, work and visit. To find out more, please visit shapingportsmouth.co.uk. This podcast was supported by Spark Community Space and Portsmouth Community Lottery.